Anwar. Cousin Tariq. Wednesday evening in the Hussein household. You have retreated upstairs to your den because your mother-in-law has come round to visit Bibi, who's home early from work, and she's in a state, utterly inconsolable, in fact. Most of the time, Samina is okay for an old bat, unless you happen to be single. She is afflicted with bridezilla by proxy syndrome, and is always in search of a wedding to organise. But tonight she's wailing and pulling her hair, upset beyond all reason. She supplements Uncle Taleb's income by housekeeping. To keep it respectable, she only works for gay men. Anyway, she found one of her clients dead on the bathroom floor this Tuesday, and it gave her a funny turn. And every evening since, she's come round to angst and wail like a one-woman banshee convention. You'd think she'd be getting over it by now, but no. If anything, it gets worse. Right now, despite Bibi plying her with tea and sympathy, she's so far out of her tree that the squirrels are sending out search parties. After half an hour of her wailing, you finally crack, climb the loft ladder and pull it up behind you. Maybe you should tell Bibi to bring home some Valium from work. Nobody would miss it, and it'd be a small mercy for the old woman. But right now, her sobbing is getting on your tits mightily. So you stick your music library on random play, bury your phone under a cushion, and haul out Tariq's spare pad from behind the slowly bubbling beer bucket, with a vague idea of seeing if he's got any work for you. As soon as you open it up and get online via the dodgy directional aerial he set you up with, he calls you. Anwar, my man, how are you hanging? Tariq has this annoying habit of trying to talk slang like the hep rappers and gangster cats of previous generations. It's annoying because he gets it badly wrong every time. He wears a two sizes too small pork pie hat and dyes his moustache orange because he thinks it's cool. Plus it annoys the fuck out of Imam Hafiz, not to mention his elder sister Bibi. He also takes the piss out of everybody. What's really galling is that you got a sneaky feeling that he might be onto something. Certainly, Tariq's gone further and got more in 24 years than you have in nearly 30. Otherwise, why would you be working for him? I'm hanging fine, cuz, just fine. But your mother is another matter. She's down in the kitchen with Bibi, and I'm up in the attic and close to jamming cotton wool in my ears, I can tell you. She's fucking lost it. She's lost the plot, cuz. Did you know the stiff she found was murdered? It's on the Spurtle's news crawl. The filth are all over it. That's some heavy shit right there, my man. And that's before you get into the juicier rumours about how he was whacked. Fucking chancer, if you ask me. Fucker deserved it. But it's hard on Mum, walking in on him while she was about her scudges. Listen, I've got a job on. Do you have time to look over some templates for me? I'm customising a chat room for Ali, and I need someone to whack the scripts and try to make them fall over. Which Ali are you working for? Short, fat Ali, tall and bearded Ali, or psycho punk Ali? You know fucking well I don't work with Shorty McFatso, and Skinny McBeard is a fucking space cadet. Got no money because he spends everything he can scrounge on Mary Jane. What? He's got a Scottish girlfriend now? Tariq rolls his eyes as if you said something dumb, then changes the subject. I'm putting this board together on behalf of our mutual friend Ali the Punk, capisce? I just need a unit tester to walk the scripts over it. If you can spare me a few hours from your critically important diplomatic duties. If you've got the money, I've got the time. It's not as if you're busy in the office. I can start as soon as you like. You don't know much about Punk Ali, but you're pretty sure you'd have heard if he was a waster. Tariq tilts his head slightly, casting his eyes in shadow. You can see the organised firefly flicker of his oh-so-posh contact lenses, retinal scanning displays for the plugged-in generation. Can you get away for an hour or two? He asks. guess so. Anything to get away from the fearful caterwauling downstairs. Where do you want to meet? You know the halfway house on Flesh Market Close? Of course you know it. It's one of the gnome's favoured hangouts precisely because it's half underground, in a microwave shadow where mobiles work erratically and GPS doesn't reach. Stands to reason Tariq would know about it too. Sure. See you there in half an hour. Tariq cuts the connection. You switch off the pad and lay it aside, then peer at the beer bucket. The wee transparent plastic hingmy, airlock, but you thought only spaceships had them, farts at you. It smells of yeast and a faint tang of something metallic. You fight back the urge to lift the lid and sneak a look inside. The brewing facts were all very insistent that you shouldn't do that. Sleep tight, you admonish it. Then you drop the trapdoor and scramble down the ladder and out into the night. It's evening, but you need sunglasses. That's Edinburgh in late spring, early summer. The sun's low, but staying up later and later, and the local pagans will be doing that infidel sex festival thing that the local Christians get so hot and bothered about on Carlton Hill in a couple of weeks. You pull your shoes and suit jacket on and trudge up to the high street, then down the steep and garish shop frontage of Coburn Street to the top of Flesh Market Close. You walk down the steps carefully, clutching the handrail, until you come to the landing with the halfway house. Tariq's in the back booth, of course, nursing a pint of heavy. You nod at him, then turn to the bar and order a lager. A minute later, you're squeezing in knee to knee with cousin Porky McWideboy. He raises his glass to you cheerily. I didn't know you drank here, you tell him, which is the truth. I don't drink alcohol. Tariq wipes suds from his moustache. Neither do I. You raise your glass to him. Watch me practice not drinking alcohol. He looks irritated, but responds in kind. Here's the package. Tariq slides a wee memory card across the table at you. There's a high-def movie file on this card. Play it. It's a movie. Change its suffix to .exe and run it, and it'll do something else. Remember to change it back again after you've done with it, of an evening. All right. You eye the card with a distinct lack of enthusiasm. Then you pull out your phone, elaborately remove the argyle sock, and inspect it carefully. There is, as you anticipated, no signal, so you roll the sock back over it and stare at Tariq pointedly. I'm still on probation, you remind him. I thought you said this was about testing a chat room. It could be, Tariq's noncommittal. There's a VM in there, and it's hosting a web app with a chat room. Nothing else. But you don't want it to go anywhere near the net. You're going to stay 100% offline while you're running it, and you keep it that way. Get the picture? You get it all right, and it gives you pause for thought. If Mr. Webber gets the idea that you're a web monkey for your cousin, he'll yell at you because you're nae supposed to go near a web server while you're on probation. But as long as it's legal web monkey shit, you're pretty sure you can plead wife and two bairns to support and get off with a slap on the wrist and a talking to. They're supposed to be trying to rehabilitate you, after all, and Tariq's not one of the dodgy playmates named in the injunction. But only because he was too smart to get caught. This doesn't sound like your regular web monkey business. There's no need to take elaborate concealment measures if something's halal. This business with stegged VMs and sneakernet exchanges in wireless shadows has got to be something else. Just like Colonel Datka's bread mix. I'm not taking it unless you tell me what it is. You leave the chip on the table, stranded sober and central between two beer glasses. Seriously, cuz, a man could go to prison. Not really. Not unless you fuck up. His moustache twitches upward at the corners. The VM contains a web app with a chat room application and some test data. I want you to unit test the chat room and its templates for browser accessibility. Search semantics, the usual shit. That's all. Except, I want you to keep your yap shut and make sure you're offline while you do it. €500, take it or leave it. That's good money for a webmonkey, and you're tempted. But what's the payload going to be, you ask? I don't know yet. Fresh bluefin tuna sashimi by airmail. Fix your speeding tickets. Your bank balance is temporary overdrawn. Hello, I am the widow of Barrister Incomo. Dearly beloved in Christ, can you be sincere? We know what you did last Saturday night. Who the fuck cares? It's just money. They give me the site. I mess with the chat room software. You get to test it all works. That's all. There's no payload there. Not yet. You watch as your left hand reaches out to cover the memory card. It's like it's at the end of someone else's arm. Someone a couple of years younger. Someone without a wife and kids to protect. Someone who's never done time in prison. It's like it belongs to someone stupid and short-sighted. You're not short-sighted and stupid. You know better than to take on a Joe job. A hijacked copy of a legit website, one that Tariq's upstream mate is going to turn into a shell for some kind of scam after he finishes busily installing backdoors in the community portal. Knowing Tariq, it's probably going to host some horrible malware that's going to recruit unwitting mules to visit the chat room, then infest their phones and empty their bank accounts. But it's not a Joe job, you hear yourself thinking, if there's no payload. It might not happen. If the word yet didn't keep appending itself to that thought, you'd be a happy camper. Relax, cuz. €500, you remind him, and stand up, leaving your half-full pint. You don't want to risk your mother-in-law smelling it on your breath and recognizing it when you go home. €500 for the father of my niece and nephew. Trust me. I wouldn't be asking you to do this if I thought they might end up growing up without their dad. Tariq raises his glass. Just remember to stay offline while you run it, and nothing can possibly go wrong. When you get home an hour later, you find to your relief that Samina has gone home. Bibi's in the kitchen, perched on a stool at the breakfast bar, poring over a pad, clearly engrossed. Hello? You say, then pause. Where are the kids? It takes a moment for her to look up. Nasim's at Play Pals. They're doing five-a-side football tonight. Farida's staying with her grandparents for the evening. Which isn't so unusual, but then she drops the bomb. Is there anything we should be talking about? You hate it when Bibi gets like this. Nostrils slightly flared, brows drawn in, squinting at you like you're a bug in a test tube. You call it her professional face. What are you reading? You ask. It looks to be illustrated, but you can't read English upside down. Oh, just community practice training material, she says dismissively. We have to do these revision exercises regularly to stay up to date. Current best practice in identification and clinical management of at-risk groups. Communicating infection control information about STIs to MSMs. That sort of thing. She rests a hand on the screen. Where've you been? Out seeing Tariq, you say. There's no point concealing it from her. He's got a little job for me. Oh, Anwar. She smiles. Eyes narrowing, then the smile fades, leaving only the set stare. Tell me he hasn't talked you into one of his schemes. I have a perfectly good job, you protest. I'm the honorary consul for the independent. Bibi sighs and taps one of her shoes against the table leg. It begins to dawn upon you that you may be in real trouble here. How much did he promise you? Surrender is inevitable. €500, it's just a... She interrupts. I'm going to kill my little shit of a brother one of these days. Your stomach does a backflip. Your wife is a nice, quiet, well-brought-up lady who does not interrupt people unless they're in so deep they need to pause for decompression on the way back up. Right now, she's exuding more quiet menace than Keanu Reeves in the Godfather remake. He knows where you've been, he knows you're on probation, and he ought to know better. Her hands are balled up into fists like walnuts, small and hard as wooden clubs. It's nothing. He just wants me to test a website, you protest. Listen, it's not malware, and there's nothing shady about it. It's just that he wants me to test out a chat room setup he's configuring for a friend. He knows I need the work, and I can be discreet. Really? Fist on hip, she glares at you. If you're so good at being discreet, perhaps you'd like to explain this. She points, and now you really know you're in trouble, because the object of her ire is sitting on the countertop beside the sink, looking for all the world like a bag of produce of People's No. 4 grain products factory of Issyk Kulistan. It's a bread mix. Your heart sinks. Isn't it? Quite possibly. Although I don't suppose it meets EU standards on food safety, or labelling, hygiene for that matter. And I'm curious, oh my husband, as to why anyone would bother shipping prepackaged bread mix from Kyrgyzstan instead of bulk grain, or maybe flour. Oh, that's easy enough, you exclaim with relief. Colonel Datka's got his finger in the flour factory and is using the shipments to... I'm told the going price is 60 euros a bag, she hisses. For bread mix. Do you really want Nassim and Farida to grow up fatherless, my husband? Motherless too, because I swear, if you get yourself arrested again, I shall die of shame. But no, you don't need to worry about me. You just carry on and thoughtlessly follow your own selfish urges without considering the consequences. Man! She pronounces that last with such lip-smacking contempt that you recoil instinctively, racking your brain for an explanation. It must be the women's studies group at the mosque. They've clearly got to her. Next thing you know, she'll be ditching her jeans for a niqab and angrily denouncing the oligo-hetero-patriarchy on marches. The spectre of no more sex on the home front hovers over you, and despite your desire for dick, the idea of losing your wife to a bunch of hairy-legged feminist separatist fundamentalists fills you with horror. Please, Bibi, it's not like that. I only want what's best for the bairns. If I don't work, what kind of role model am I going to be for them? But the idiots in the probation service don't want me to use my skills. I think you mean they don't want you to get yourself slung back inside for breaking the law. And you know something, oh my husband? Neither do I. If this was just about the dodgy bread mix, I could ignore it. Or maybe it was just the odd job for Tariq. I can even ignore the other stuff. I'm not blind. I know what our marriage is to you. She leans towards you and sniffs. But he's had you in that pub again, hasn't he? And you couldn't even be bothered to hide it. You smell of beer. Mouthwash, right now, or you'll set them a bad example. Her nostrils flare. My mother would have a fit. Sammy isn't here, you say defensively. And anyway, I only had one pint. Oh, yes, just one pint. That's like being a little bit pregnant, or just one casual sex partner, or just one arrest and criminal conviction, or just one scam at a time. What does it take to get through to you? You've got to learn to think ahead. You've got to be more discreet. You blink at her. The anger seems to have ebbed into wide-eyed confusion. She's really worried, you realize. It's not just a bad day in the dispensary, so let's yell at the house husband, though that's happened in the past. What's got into her? Then another thought strikes you. You said it's changing hands for 60 euros a bag. Do you know who's paying that much for it? I know where to get more. We could clean up. That night, you get to bed down on the attic floor with the burping brew kit airlock to keep you company as you try to work out exactly what you said wrong. Women, who knows why they do what they do? Certainly not you. And you even married one. Toymaker. Reality Excursion.
You. Yes, you. Who the fuck did you think I was talking to? The Tooth Fairy? That's him on the left. Jesus? No, I'm talking to you, fuckwit. Whoever or whatever you are, watching over me. I'm an executive, you know. That's why there's a chip in my head. The operation put it there so they could keep track of me. You've got to look at it from their point of view. It's cheap due diligence. Couple of dozen terabytes of non-volatile storage, mics and GPS for metadata, to deter you from going behind our backs, they said. It's not just a recorder, either. They can make LTE chipsets really small, you know. Phone chipset in the head. Maybe it's transmitting all the time and you're sitting in a darkened room listening to my sub-vocalized thoughts. Or maybe you're just an AI application, running pattern-matching code on the speech-to-text output somewhere in the cloud. What if it's receiving, too, controlling the old meat puppet? Maybe there's a bomb in my skull. Learning too much about our employers is a firing expense. They're said to favor 9mm. But what if they wanted to be sure? Multi-channel redundancy via cognitive radio. Push a button, bounce a signal off the moon. Hello, bomb. Pleased to meet you. Let's go out with a splash. You only live in my imagination. I die, you die. But I can still talk to you. And we have a problem, my invisible friend. No, let me be more precise. I have a problem. Enemies. They've iced my primary candidates for COO and CFO before I could doorstep them for pre-induction assessment. To make matters worse, I became a person of interest in the police investigation purely by coincidence, and they took a DNA sample. I'm pinned down here until we can file a privacy redaction order and get the sample incinerated. And for the icing on the shit cake, my fucking luggage is still missing. Missing! That was as of 3 hours ago. Maybe the cunt on the Hilton hospitality desk has found it. That'd be a shame. I was looking forward to taking it out of his hide with compound interest on top. 5.62 kilograms. Fuck it, my sample was in there. And my meds. I've been giving myself a little holiday from the pills recently, giving myself a holiday to remember what it's like to have a mind of my own. Neurodiverse. Losing it from the front desk onwards, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. Guess I just have to hold myself together until I can get my luggage back, or I'll skin Mr. Hospitality in a bathtub full of brine. But anyway, I have a phone. I always have a phone, short of brain surgery to separate me from it. Phones are deadlier than guns. I need to talk to the business support desk. Arms race deathmatch between the cognitive radio-free internet rebels and the lizards who run the secret world government. We use the rebels' remixers, and the phone in my head connects direct through the undernet, diving for a nameless server in Central Asia. Hello? Look around, my invisible friend. See the park, the mud-gray field, and the trees. We have bandwidth here. The council installed routers in all the lampposts, the better to handle the feed from the webcams in all the street lamps. The lizards want to catch the rape machines, but they're too cunning. Bushes block the electromagnetic emissions from the lights. Hello? This is Abel November in Edinburgh. You, that is to say me, use Abel November as a codename when talking to the operations call center. This is the 21st century, and even international crime syndicates and offshore venture capital trusts, the two are sometimes hard to tell apart, need offshore call centers. You can't do business without the right tools, after all. Is that a police reconnaissance drone cruising just below the eaves of the tenements on the other side of the field? Or is it just a very large bat? Hello, Abel November. What is your situation? Mike Blair has been murdered. Vivian Crowler has been murdered. My fuck, shit, piss, cocksucking luggage has gone missing with my meds, and I haven't had any for 72 hours. I am motherfucking angry, losing my objectivity somewhat. Can you help? The meds are the hard part. I'm putting you on hold. Please wait. You find a wooden bench and sit down, touching it, feeling the dry, crumbling grain of decomposing, dead, lignified, hermaphrodite flesh between your fingers. You obey the order to hold on instinctively, clutching the surface with one hand. If you lose your grip, you might fall up into the sky. You're very light. This is a really fucking shitty time to have an attack, but it's not so surprising. Every so often, you cut back on your meds for a couple of days, re-establish your baseline. Is it just bad luck that when you're ready to go back on the pills, they steal your luggage and murder your contacts? The police have eyes in the sky, watching and waiting. How can these not be connected? Abel November, says the woman you're listening to, her voice distorted by the hearing implant in your skull, drainpipe echo of an encrypted tunnel. What's that about your meds? Are you taking them? No! You want to shout, but the phone is in your head, and if you yell aloud, someone or something bad might hear. Gently, the mic in your throat hears all. My meds are in my luggage. My luggage has been missing for 2 days. Little white lies shining like baby teeth in a shallow grave. Okay, we can take care of that for you, says your operator. I'm going to send your prescription through to the nearest pharmacy for an emergency resupply. Your identity, is it still clean? No, you say. No, no. It's your fault. You told the police to steal my DNA, didn't you? Motherfucking ghost chip skull bomb, invisible capitalist friends, can't trust them anywhere. It's... You realize you're hyperventilating and force yourself to slow down. I visited Mike Blair and found a murder investigation in progress. Cops in ceramic terraline overalls picking tiny fragments of your skull off the bathroom floor. They sampled me as a POI. This identity's dirty. I need a fallback. Okay, don't worry. I'm putting you on hold again. You hold, while the police RPV ghosts across the park on silent ducted fans searching the bushes for rape machines. No, rape machines don't exist. Crazy childhood phantasms that lurk into adulthood. They're less real than this phone in your skull, the lifeline to the operation's soothing dream of control. Once you get on your meds again, the bad stuff will all go away. The same cannot be said of all the other shit. You say paranoia, I say surveillance state. Worried about being tracked by hidden cameras, stealthy, airborne, remotely piloted vehicles, and chips implanted in your skull? You're merely a realist. The 21st century so far has been a really fucking awful couple of decades for paranoid schizophrenics. Luckily, you're not paranoid. You just have these little breakdowns from time to time. A medication side effect. A side effect of coming off your meds, that is. Usually at the least convenient time, like now. Something is watching you from the trash can alongside the footpath. Then it moves. A starling. They're making a comeback from the brink of extinction. I'm going to text a route to a local pharmacy to your handset. I want you to go there immediately. They know you're a tourist, and it's urgent. Don't leave until you've got your pills. Do you understand? You nod, happily, glad that someone is there to catch your fall. Not a lizard. Lizards never catch. Yes. They want to brainwash you and make a good little worker robot slave out of your flayed soul. Okay, you're to stop using your current identity immediately after you get your prescription. There's a new background waiting for you, and I'll send you the collection details in the next message. Clear? Yes. You swallow. Your throat is unaccountably dry. This always happens when the firewall in your head springs a leak. What else? We can't help with your contacts, she says abruptly, sibilance buzzing like an angry hornet just behind your left ear. You're not the only founder executive with problems today. We're busy fighting off denial-of-service attacks on all fronts. Marketing communications are experiencing severe functional ablation, and it's degrading our ability to comply with our service-level agreements. Basic medical and identity services are running normally, but unfortunately, as a Tier 2 executive, you may experience delays in fulfillment of your general support requests. If you can find out who exactly killed your contacts, you ought to let us know immediately. Is it the lizards? Your loyal lips are frozen shut. The operator doesn't need to hear about the lizards. She's not the only one. Most people don't believe in the lizards and react badly if you try to tell them. It's the brainwashing. The operator sounds tense and tired. She doesn't need any more worries. If you make her worry that you're losing it, talking about shape-changing lizards, she may push that button and bounce that signal off the moon and, hello, Mr. Brain Bomb, goodbye, Toymaker. So you do not say one word about the lizards. Like the rape machines, they're imaginary haunts, except an edgy feeling tells you they're not. I'll do that, you reassure the operator. Okay, go get your meds. And a moment later, the phone in your wallet vibrates and a couple of numbered tags show up on its map of the city, along with a healthfully walkable route. You have a mission. You're going to get your meds, pick up your new identity documents, then look into replacing your luggage and finding somewhere safe to stay. That's all you can do right now. Maybe when you're back in familiar headspace, you can make plans for whittling down the number of your enemies. But that's not a job for this afternoon. The nearest pharmacy turns out to be inside a red brick Tesco superstore. The shiny green glass cylinder of a government-run theoretical farm rising from the former parking lot behind it. You sidle up to the counter and make yourself known to the government employee behind the counter. She bustles off into the back room, and the pharmacist comes out. She's a pretty, petite woman, 30-something Anglo-Indian. "Mr. Christie?" she asks. "It's an alias. It's your alias, for the next hour at least. May I see some proof of identity?" You show her your entirely authentic driving license, and she reads it with dark, unreadable eyes, then scans your thumbprint and verifies it. "Thank you," she says. Into the back, then back out again with a bag. "You've had this prescription before?" You nod, eagerly. "It's a selective metabotropic glutamate agonist, sturdy and well understood, a neuroleptic firewall proof against the rape machine fantasies and mind control issues you've had ever since the disastrous clinical trial they put you through during your teens. My luggage went missing. I really need this." You reach out, watching the minute tremors in your hand as if from a great distance. "I'll see you do." She hands the box over with a curious expression on her face. "There's no charge. You're in Scotland. We still have a National Health Service." "That's you, then. Have a nice day." "They have a working healthcare system here, don't they?" You nod jerkily, then back away. Outside the shiny, socialized factory farm, post office, pharmacy, and general-purpose Omni-store, you gulped down 2 tablets. One of the doctors at the clinic told you how to do that, pump priming, years ago, and stand there shaking for a minute. Gray streets, tall buildings looking down on you with eye-socket windows, bats glide overhead, or pigeons, or RPVs with terahertz radar eyes, vigilant for the deviant. You shiver. You need to get under cover before they come for you. Give the meds time to cut in. You haven't had an attack this bad since... Don't think about it. You are the toymaker's avatar in this nation-state. You're the executive, strong and determined and entrepreneurial and skilled. You're not some kind of paranoid schizophrenic personality disorder case stoned on his own brain chemistry. There really is a chip in your skull, monitoring and controlling and stabilizing on behalf of the conspiracy for which you work. There really is someone or something watching over you, controlling from afar. The hallucinations are going to go away. Then you're going to take this reality by the throat and twist it until it crackles under your fingers like... The replacement prescription sits heavy in your pocket, reassuring. A chemotaxic anchor, pulling you closer to the harbor of high-functioning quasi-sanity. Just knowing it's in your system makes you feel better. So you walk back along the main road towards town, taking your time and avoiding the nosy buses and their intrusive cameras. About 1/2 mile later, you pass a hole-in-the-wall diner, where you pause to order a mixed mezze and a plate of falafels. The bored Middle Eastern guy behind the bar spends his time between serving you, hunched over an elderly pad, handset glued to his ears, evidently talking an Alzheimer's patient through replying to an email. "No, look at the top. It says get mail, write, address book, reply. Tap reply. No, not the red dot. Below the red dot, what do you see?" His despairing half-duplex monotone soothes your rattled nerves, reassuring you that he's not remotely likely to be spying on you. When you leave the restaurant, the day has brightened considerably. There are no bushes for concealment, no sinister shapes flitting past overhead. An unmanned police Segway rolls up the hill, cameras panning in all directions, but even the neurotypical can see that. Another 50 minutes of walking sees you back in the West End, approaching the marble-fronted monolith of the Hilton. You are relatively calm, at peace with what it is you're about to do. It's true that they have misplaced your luggage, and with it your sample merchandise. However, let us retain a sense of proportion. This is not the worst thing that has happened to you today, is it? Once you've unpacked your 5.62 kilograms of home and bolted the hotel room door, you'll be safe. It just depends on whether the fool on the hospitality desk has found... Your march across the polished floor of the lobby comes to an abrupt halt. There's a well-dressed woman waiting beside the desk, but nobody behind it. You can feel your arousal level rising. You need your bag. Your commercial sample is sleeping in it. Are they playing with you? The woman is watching you with elaborate inattentiveness, carefully avoiding eye contact. "Do you work here?" you demand. "No." Now she looks at you. A wry twist of the lips. "They're trying to find my parcel. I had it sent post-restant. FedEx say they delivered it this morning, but the hotel knows nothing." The very idea. Suddenly it strikes you. You shipped your luggage via Yamato, a Takuhaibin logistics company, and they simply don't lose things. But if this woman's package went missing and she used FedEx... My luggage is missing too, you confess. Think they've got a problem?
I'd say so.
She nods.
Mr. McAndrews says they've been having network trouble all day. That's usually a euphemism for malware, in my experience.
An upswing in cybernetic infestation isn't your problem, but it puts the hospitality manager's attitude in a different light. Maybe he's not actually trying to fuck with you. And here he comes, scurrying back out from a locked door with a box in his hands. He sees you and does a double take, but goes straight for your companion.
Miss Strait, we found it. They've got the computers working again, and it was sitting in our loading area along with the other inbound consignments.
He looks at you directly.
Mr. Christie, your luggage was missing too, wasn't it?
Cheeky sod. You nod.
I'll just go see if it's turned up as well, now we've got our logistics working again.
He turns and rushes off, leaving your companion looking at her box.
I thought he was supposed to get some proof of identity before handing items over, she says disapprovingly.
Well, that's his problem, isn't it? You say and smile at her. You focus on her properly for the first time, taking in red hair, carefully styled, lips and eyes emphasized, but not heavy on the slap, wearing a green dress with a low neckline that's kept on the business side of sexy by a black jacket. Mature but rootable, in other words, and if she isn't on the pull, you're a cactus. You haven't had any action for a couple of weeks now. You don't know where the local cruising grounds are, and here in the dour Puritan Anglosphere, the hotel front desk doesn't provide room service. You have certain needs, exacerbated now you're coming down for your little reality excursion. You posted an ad on a swinger aggregator a couple of days ago, but no joy yet. The idea of her plumped, wasp-sting lips wrapped around your cock appeals. You take conscious control of your smile and widen it.
I suppose so.
She catches your eye and smiles back.
I'll just have to wait.
Interested but coy. You've met this attitude before, and it bugs the living fuck out of you. Why don't these sheeple admit that it's pointless and drop the pretense that they care? Oh, but I'd feel guilty, they say, if you ask them why they tipped the waiter, returned the excess change they were given, didn't pad the insurance claim, turned down the zipless fuck, even though there's absolutely no chance that anyone would catch them. You smile back at her and nod.
Are you staying here for long, you ask?
Oh, just checking in for a few nights. She raises an eyebrow.
Yourself?
The same, you say honestly. Here on business, just checking in, gone tomorrow. At a loose end, really. Her pupils dilate slightly, and there are some other cues. You've studied this shit, looked into NLP, and you focus on emitting the right signals, mirroring her subconscious arousal.
That's a shame, she says. What line are you in?
That's off script, but not too far off script. I'm in toys, you say. It's even true. Re-establishing a local supply chain subsidiary that's been neglected for too long. The door is opening. The irritating Mr. McAndrews is on his way back. Busy by day, totally at a loose end by night. I don't suppose you'd be interested in dinner. 2 out of 3 times they say no at this point. If she says yes, you've got about a 40% chance of finding out if she swallows. McAndrews is busy with the telescoping handle of what, out of the corner of your eye, you recognize is your case. You keep your eyeballs pointed the right way, which is not at Ms. Strait's face or tits.
Sure,
she says, her smile medium flirtatious.
Meet here. 8 tonight.
Glad to, you say, mirroring her expression and carefully concealing your satisfaction. Then you break contact deliberately, slewing towards Mr. McAndrews, who's wrestling your suitcase to a halt in front of you. Ah, excellent. By the way, Ms. Strait here. Dorothy. You glance back at her, let your smile widen, nod slightly. Was expecting you to ask for some ID.
Ah, yes, but you see, we have a record.
McAndrews twitches at the discreet camera dome overhead. Nobody would steal from us. Dorothy is raising an eyebrow at you. John, you volunteer.
Mr. John R. Christie, if you could just sign here.
McAndrews thrusts a tablet at you.
Bastard!
I'll see you this evening, John. She turns and is gone. You take your luggage up to your room and go through it with shaking hands. Here's the sample merchandise, occupying half the case. You plug it in to charge just in case a demo is called for in the next couple of days. Here's your sterile pad, still in the box it came in from PC World, and here are your spare clothes. Toothbrush, shaver, meds, bling case. You carefully arrange the small items on the desk in their correct order. Then you put the pad online and tell it to download its work personality from the cloud while you have a scalding hot shower and change your clothes. Of course you can't stay here, but you must stay here, or rather, John Christie has to stay where the police expect to find him during their investigation. You can be someone else, somewhere else, and your sample merchandise had better be somewhere else lest the police find it in your custody. That would totally suck. Luckily, there's a magical mystery tour in your phone that'll take you out of John Christie's panopticon-enforced sheep's clothing and give you a new suit and a second shot at liftoff. But the sudden shortage of candidate executives for your business plan is disturbing. Finding two of them dead is not a coincidence. You need backup before you start digging for the killers. And you're going to get very little of it until the operation cleans up after that DOS attack. A plan begins to come together in your mind. You'll renew your room for the rest of the week, but you won't be there. You're going to set up shop elsewhere. You're going to go and buy new luggage and pick up your new papers, like Operation Support told you to. Leave your old luggage with the sample merchandise parked with a useful idiot, just in case the police come snooping. Forward all calls, sanitize the room with a brisk spritz of sports stadium DNA, and all that's left is the legal wrap-up. John Christie will be staying in your hotel room, but you'll be gone. Meanwhile, tonight there's dinner, and hopefully baka sekusu with a straight bitch for dessert. You've had better days, but this one is showing signs of improvement. The pad finishes downloading. You rename some files, point the browser at a malware site, and allow it to infect the machine, scrambling certain files to provide you with deniability if anyone searches it. Then you shove it in the room safe, pick up your meds, bling and keyring, pull on a pair of glasses, pick up your case, with fully charged sample merchandise, and head out the door. Once you pair them with your skull phone, the glasses steer you across the main road and down a picturesque path that meanders through Princess Street Gardens, out of sight of the trams, around the base of the huge granite butt plug on which the castle squats. The skull phone's display is austere, basic. You can only cram so much intelligence into a gram of glucose, fuel cell-powered silicon leaching off your blood sugar and dissolved oxygen. A third of a mile later, you cross a bridge across the buried railway station, then through a slightly tatty subterranean shopping mall where you spend half an hour hunting for the necessities to replace your regular luggage. Half the storefronts are shuttered, victims of high street flight. Climbing the Waverley steps, you pause, then turn right and cross the intersection with North Bridge. According to the messages queued in your chip, Your new identity documents can be obtained from an office on the third floor of the huge pile of Gothic limestone within whose windows you can just see an eerily glowing glass cube. You walk through the revolving door and cross the lobby of the old post office building to the glass-walled lifts that slide silently up and down within the echoing atrium. There's a transparent airlock in front of the lift doors. John Christie for the Honorary Consul of the Independent Republic of Issyk Kulistan, you say as the outer door closes behind you. There's a puff of air from the explosive detectors below, a beep, and the lift door opens before you. 30 seconds later, you're standing in a narrow corridor outside a glass door and an entry phone. You push the buzzer.
"Mr. Christie, please come in. It's the second office on the left," says a Scottish-accented voice.
You silently repeat your line as you walk along to the second door and arrive as a 30-ish British Asian man in a cheap suit pulls it open and looks up at you with a peculiarly bovine expression.
"What can I do for you?"
"Colonel Datka sent me." You can see the key turning in the lock behind his petrified eyes. "I'm here to collect some papers. And I have a little job for you." Interlude 1. Kamal, Spam Cop. Welcome to the post-national age. Here you are, sitting in the window seat of a creaky old Embraer as it makes its final approach into Edinburgh Airport, banking over the tidal barrage and the wind farms in the Firth of Forth. It's been 5 years since your only previous visit, and not long enough by far. Eggs and spam. Back then, you had the glamour and the mojo, the whole men in black thing working for you. The Europol supercop from L'Organisation pour nourrir et consolider l'Europe, travelling with a tiger team of forensic analysts and a digitally signed email from the juge d'inquisition to hand, in case you needed steamroller your way across the objections of a provincial police force who didn't realise what they were dealing with. Except things went terribly wrong. The national security dinosaurs, rising from their uneasy sleep, opening the closet doors to draw forth a conga line of dancing skeletons. It still gives you the cold shudders, thinking about the ease with which a couple of teams of coke-fueled black-hat Shanghainese hackers rooted the network backbones of a pair of peripheral states. And the shit you stumbled into out here on the edge of the North Sea was as nothing compared to what your colleagues had to clean up in Gdansk and Warsaw. Not to mention the chewing out your boss François gave you during your performance eval the following spring. Black marks on the Man in Black's record. And the rudeness of the Scottish police. That really rankled. Professional respect. Have these people never heard of it? Eggs, ham, and spam. The plane's wings buzz angrily as flaps extend. The wave crests are an endless tessellation of white triangles below, marred by the wake of a sailboat. 4 years in career limbo, reassigned to business affairs and buried leech-deep in the bowels of the Department of Internet Fraud. 4 years spent in a pokey little office in a corner of Madhu Plaza Tower, where flies buzz madly beneath the chilly glare of LED spotlights, patiently paging through reams of spam in search of the websites of the idiots who pay to rent botnets by the hour. Eggs, ham, sausage, and spam. Some say the internet is for porn, but you know that in truth the internet is for spam. As communication technologies got cheaper, the cost of grabbing a megaphone and jabbing it up against the aching eardrums of an advertising-jaded public collapsed. Meanwhile, the content is king mantra of the monetization mavens gridlocked the new media in an advertising-supported business model.
The great and the good of the Academy have been fighting a losing battle against the Anglo-Saxon hucksterization model for the past 30 years. But the sad truth is that the battle's lost. The tide of war was turned in Beijing and New Delhi when the rapidly industrializing new superpowers climbed on the make-money-fast bandwagon and gave free rein to the free market, red in tooth and claw, just as long as the sharp bits were directed outwards. And today the entire world is still drowning in a sea of attention-grabbing, unregulated, unethical, untruthful spamvertising. Spam, ham, sausage, and spam. The white noise roar of the cabin air conditioning is augmented by a new noise, the wind rush from around the open nose wheel door as the landing gear drops. Most of the public don't notice it, but the war on spam goes ever on, and it's a war on two fronts. One front, your own, is fought by battalions of law enforcement officers and prosecutors. The most egregious junk sells hard goods, stuff with a physical shipping address, to the vulnerable. Fake pharmaceuticals to die by, trashy Tanzanian machine tool parts, unlicensed herbal supplements from Nigeria, counterfeit designer clothes and handbags and heart valves made of shoe leather. They show up, you order the goods, backtrace through courier and logistics to the motherlode, obtain a warrant, pop goes the weasel, round and round the merry-go-round. Spam, eggs, spam, spam, ham and spam. The brigades of system administrators and programmers on the other front tackle the problem from the opposite end, with ever more elaborate AI filters that scan message traffic and tell ham from spam. 95% of all human-readable traffic over the net is spam, a figure virtually unchanged since the late noughties. There are dumb filters and smart filters. Dumb filters look for naughty words. Smart filters look for patterns of diction that are characteristic of automatically assembled text. For much spam is generated by drivel-speaking AI, designed purely to fool the smart filters by convincing them that it's the effusion of a real human being and of interest to the recipients. Slowly but surely, the Turing test war proceeds, as the spammers are forced to invest in ever more elaborate AI engines to generate conversations that contemporarily convince the spam cops' AI engines that they are, in fact, human beings. Spam, sausage, spam, 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 ham, spam, potato, and spam. And still you're losing. There's a bump and rumble, and you're shoved forward against your lap belt as the regional jet's thrust reversers cut in. Welcome to the Republic of Scotland, semi-privatized satrapy of the former United Kingdom and sock-puppet independent vote on the Council of Ministers, soon to acquire the extra clout of a pair of senators, once the tedious ratification treaty completes and the European Parliament upgrades to a fully bicameral legislature. You're back. And this time you don't have a posse of high-powered forensic analysts behind you, or diplomatic letters of marque and reprise, or much of anything, in fact. Just a dossier, a disturbing to terrifying trend analysis from a research team in the Sorbonne, and a suggestive pattern of murders smeared bloody-handed across the width and depth of the EU. Spam, 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 murder and spam. 70 years of research and development into artificial intelligence failed to deliver HAL 9000, but they did provide a huge array of toolkits for tackling complex problems. Today, in the wake of the bursting of the worldwide higher education bubble, the big funding sources in computational artificial intelligence research are computer games and cognitive marketing services, from personalized message generation to automated spear phishing. Some say the spammers are pouring more money into Minsky's inheritors than the US Department of Defense ever imagined. The spam cops retaliate. There's an arms race in progress, and some experts mutter dark warnings of the spamularity. the global chaos that will ensue once the first distributed spamming engine achieves human-equivalent sentience. Possibly the only thing holding it back is the multi-tiered nature of the darknet economy. Malware that supports spamware frequently carries virus-scanning payloads that immunize host computers and phones against rival strains of infection. After all, it's a free market economy, red in tooth and claw, and if you can't count on a state to keep the opposition in check, you've got to see to your security yourself. Spam, 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 baked memes, spam, spam, spam and spam. This week, for the first time in a couple of years, the machine-generated spew has faltered significantly. Most of the usual darknets are still vomiting forth the gibber-fantastic, but their core semantic networks aren't updating. It's the same flavour of froth as last week's, and thereby easier to filter out. No new botnets have surfaced, switching from build-out to broadcast mode. There has been a curious absence of new malware strains. Spam has actually fallen. It would be glad tidings, indeed, if not for the puzzling question of why, and those unsolved killings, which is what your superiors have sent you to look into in Edinburgh. They skimmed the bullet point in your resume and mistakenly assumed you'd be at home here, able to work hand in glove with the locals. Truly, the jaws of irony are agape. The battle against spam had grown into a bitter trench war fought on two fronts, and now a new front has been opened. Someone, or more worryingly, something, seems to have adopted a draconian approach to the problem you and yours have failed to solve in nearly four decades. And the question that everyone is worrying about is, whatever next? Spam, 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 lovely spam, nothing but spam.